single time. It was at that very moment when it suddenly hit me, the idea that every sale was the same. In fact, all at once, that very concept came bubbling up into my brain, followed a millisecond later by an elegantly simple image that I could use to explain it. The image, as it turned out, was a perfectly straight line. But that was just the beginning. Something had clicked inside my brain, and a window of clarity had swung open, giving me unfettered access to a seemingly infinite reservoir of what can best be described as pure sales wisdom. I'm talking about radically advanced stuff here. Ideas and concepts and tactics and strategies were flashing through my mind at an incredible rate. In my mind's eye, I could see my own sales strategy being pulled apart into its elemental pieces and then put back together in exactly the right order along a perfectly straight line. My heart literally skipped a beat. It happened so fast that it seemed almost instantaneous, but it hit me with the force of an atomic bomb. Until that very moment, I simply hadn't known why I had been able to far outsell every other salesperson at every single company I had ever worked for. But now I knew. My own sales strategy, which had been mostly unconscious until then, had suddenly become conscious. I could see each distinct chunk of my strategy as if it had the defined edges of a jigsaw puzzle, and each individual piece seemed to be screaming out its purpose to me. But there was more, much, much more. When I shifted my focus to any particular piece, I suddenly had access to every root experience and every memory that justified the piece's purpose and location. And by focusing a bit deeper, a torrent of words came gushing into my consciousness, providing the perfect explanation for the piece and how it related to the others. For example, if I look at the point on the line marked sales presentation, then I immediately knew that there were three things that had to be addressed before the prospect would say yes. And then, if I focused a bit harder, the word certainty popped into my mind, followed a millisecond later by each of the three tens, which seemed to be floating above the line and tethered to scenes going all the way back to my childhood of random sales situations I had been in on either side, as salesperson or prospect, and a vivid memory of why I had said no or yes to the salespeople, or the prospects had said no or yes to me. All of those things, each compressed into a millisecond, had flashed through my brain while I stood before the whiteboard, staring at the objections. From end to end, the entire experience was maybe 1 or 2 seconds, but when I turned to face the Strat Knights, I was an entirely different person. As I scanned their faces, the strengths and weaknesses of each came popping into my brain in a singular rush of thoughts, as did a perfect way to train each of them to perfection. In short, I would teach them to sell exactly the way I did, by taking immediate control of the sale and then moving the prospect from the open to the close along the shortest distance between any two points, a straight line. With renewed confidence, I said, "Don't you guys get it? Every sale is the same." All 12 Stratonites shot me confused looks. I ignored them with relish, and I unleashed my discovery. "Watch," I said forcefully, "it's a straight line." And I turned back to the whiteboard, and for the very first time, I drew that long, thin, horizontal line across the middle of it and placed a big, thick X on either end. "Now, this is your open." I pointed to the X on the left end of the line, where the sale begins, and this is your close. I pointed to the X on the right end of the line, where the prospect says, "Yeah, let's do it," and he opens up the account with you. The key here is that from literally the first word out of your mouth, everything you say and everything you do is designed to keep your prospect on the straight line and slowly nudge him forward from the open to the close. You guys follow me so far? The Strat Knights nodded in unison. The room was so quiet, you could have heard a pin drop. The air felt electric. "Good," I replied quickly. "Now, as a salesperson, every once in a while, we get one of those perfect lay-down sales where the prospect seems to be almost pre-sold before we even open up our mouths. As I continued to speak, I began drawing tiny arrows on the center of the line, starting just after the left X and then moving down the line to just before the X on the right. It's one of those sales where everything you say and everything you do and every case you make about why the prospect should buy from you, he keeps on saying yes, 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 without giving you even a single objection, right up to the moment where you ask him for the order and he agrees to close. That's what I mean by a perfect straight line sale. Who's ever had one of those perfect lay down sales where the client seemed to be almost pre-sold from the start? You all have, right? I raised my right hand, prompting them to do the same. All 12 hands quickly shut up. Of course you have, I said confidently. The problem is that those sales are far and few between. Typically, what happens is that your prospect keeps trying to take you off the straight line and take control of the conversation. I drew a series of thin arrows pointing upward and downward, away from the straight line, to illustrate that point. So basically, you want to keep the prospect on the straight line, moving forward towards the close, and he keeps trying to take you off the straight line and spiral off to Pluto. I wrote the word Pluto near the top of the whiteboard. Or down here to your anus, I wrote the words your anus near the bottom of the whiteboard, which is not a very good place to be, at least for most of you. I threw my hands in the air and shrugged, as if to say, to each his own. So what we have are these healthy boundaries above and below the line. One here and one here, I continued, drawing two dotted lines that were parallel to the straight line, one of them 6 inches above it and the other 6 inches below it. When you're inside the boundaries, you're in control of the sale and moving forward towards the close. When you're outside the boundaries, the client is in control and you're spiraling off to Pluto or down here to your anus. We are talking about the price of tea in China or politics in America or some other irrelevant topic that's not germane to the sale. And by the way, I hear you guys doing this shit all the time when I walk around the room and it drives me fucking crazy. I shook my head gravely. Seriously, 90% of the time, you guys are often freaking Pluto talking about some nonsense that has nothing to do with the stock market. I closed my eyes tightly and gave my head a few quick shakes back and forth, as if to say, something's just completely defy logic. Then I said, anyway, I know what you guys are thinking, that the more time you spend bullshitting with these people, the more rapport you end up building. Well, I've got a newsflash for you, I continued sarcastically. You're wrong. People see through that shit in 2 seconds flat, especially rich people, who are constantly on guard for that. To them, it's actually repulsive, not attractive, which is the opposite of what building rapport is all about. I shrugged. Anyway, it doesn't really matter because you guys are done with that shit now. It's over. I'm going to teach you guys how to take control of the sale tonight the way I do it and how I taught Danny to do it. And that means you're going to stay inside the boundaries here and here. This is where you're in control. Boom, boom. I banged my right knuckle on 2 spots inside the boundaries, one above the line and one below. And I marked each spot with the initials IC. And here and here, this is where you're out of control. And I banged my right knuckle on 2 spots outside of the boundaries, one above the top dotted line and one below the bottom dotted line. And then I marked each space with the initials OC. In control, out of control, I repeated, tapping the respective initials. Now, when you're on the straight line, meaning directly on it, that's where you're doing all the talking. And all these little arrows here, the reason they're all pointing down the line to the close, I began tapping the tip of my marker on each arrow as I continued speaking, starting with the very first arrow, just after the open, and moving quickly to the right, all the way down to the close. Is because with every single word you say, there's one specific goal in mind, and that's to move the prospect down the straight line towards the close. That's it. There are no free words, no time for stupid statements, and no time to go off to Pluto and talk about the price of tea in China. That shit is for novices. My obvious contempt for novices dripped off the very word. When you're speaking, it's directed. It's powerful. Your words have meaning behind them, and the meaning is to create massive certainty in the mind of your prospect as you move him down the straight line from the open to the close. I pointed to the arrows again. That's why every one of these arrows is compact and tight and right on the line, and they're all pointed straight towards the close. So again, that's what's happening when you're directly on the straight line. You're the one doing all the talking, and your client is listening. And when you're off the straight line, but still inside the boundaries, right here and here, I pointed to the spaces, it's the prospect who's doing the talking, and you're doing the listening. And by the way, this is where some really great stuff happens, when you're actually off the straight line, right in those spaces. In fact, there's not one, but two absolutely crucial things happening here. First, you're developing immediate, massive rapport on both a conscious and unconscious level. And second, you're gathering massive intelligence, which up until tonight, I used to refer to as qualifying. But starting right now, I want you to wipe that word out of your mind forever, because it doesn't even come close to describing what we need to accomplish here. You see, with the straight line, you need to gather intelligence, and I mean massive intelligence, which goes far beyond trying to figure out whether or not a prospect is financially qualified. When you gather intelligence from a prospect, you're doing all of the following things. First, you're identifying their needs, and not just their core need, but also any secondary needs or problems they might have. Second, you're identifying any core beliefs they might have that could impact the sale, such as not feeling comfortable working over the phone or with making quick decisions, and also not trusting salespeople in general. Third, you want to find out about any past experiences they've had with similar products, both good and bad, and how they feel about the salespeople they bought them from. Fourth, you want to identify their values, meaning what things are most important to them. Are they looking for growth or income? Or do they want to set themselves up for retirement? Or to give their profits to a certain charity or religious institution? It can even be that the prospect is an action junkie and they're in it for the thrills. Fifth, you want to identify their financial standards insofar as what level of wealth and spending ability they need to have to feel good about themselves. Six, where their pain lies, meaning what's keeping them up at night? What's that one single financial worry that sits at the very base of their skull and weighs them down like an anchor? You see, at the end of the day, it's knowing your prospect's pain and, if necessary, amplifying that pain if they're currently in denial, that's going to help you close the tougher sales. And seventh, you need to identify where they stand financially in terms of how much money they have in the market right now, how liquid they are, how much money they typically invest into an idea they like, and how much they are liquid for overall. So, getting back to the straight line, when you're off the line, you're looking to A, continue building on the rapport that you already have, and B, use that rapport to help you gather the more invasive intelligence, like how liquid the prospect currently is. And at the same time, you're always making sure that the encounter stays within the boundaries as you continue the process of moving the sale down the straight line towards the close. Essentially, those are the three basic tenets of the front half of the straight line. One, you must take immediate control of the sale. Two, you must engage in massive intelligence gathering while you simultaneously build massive rapport with your prospect. Three, you must smoothly transition into a straight line presentation so you can begin the process of building absolute certainty for each of the three tens. So again, during the front half of the sale, you first take immediate control of the sale. Then you use that control to gather massive intelligence, which entails asking highly specific questions which I'll map out for you in advance to make sure that you've gathered all the intelligence you need. And I'm going to circle back to this later, because starting tomorrow, you're going to be asking a lot more questions than you used to. And next, as you're gathering all this intelligence, you're going to do it in a way that allows you to build massive rapport with your prospect at the same time, which is absolutely crucial, by the way, because the questions you'll be asking him are going to get more and more invasive as you move along. And then, after you ask for the order for the first time, which happens right around here, while you're still close to the beginning, I pointed to a spot on the line about a third of the way towards the close and punctuated it by drawing a big, thick black dot. That's where the back half of the sale begins, when you get hit with your first objection. So obviously, this whole front half, back half business is merely a figure of speech. I shrugged. I mean, I could teach a frickin' monkey to read from a script and ask for the order, so don't think that you've accomplished anything amazing because you made it through the front half of the sale. It's the back half of the sale where the real selling begins. This is when you finally get the chance to roll up your sleeves and get down to cases, meaning to get to the bottom of what's really holding your prospect back, which is certainly not the objection they gave you. That's merely a smokescreen for uncertainty. And the objection could be any of these. I grabbed the top right edge of the whiteboard and flipped the board over, revealing the 14 common objections. They want to think about it, or call you back, or talk to their wife, or do some research, or it's a bad time of year. It doesn't matter which one they give you. In the end, they're all basically the same. They're smokescreens for uncertainty. In other words, your prospect still isn't certain enough to say yes, which means you've still got some selling left to do. I paused for a moment and flipped the board back over to reveal my drawing of the straight line. That's what's going on, I repeated. Every word, every phrase, every question you ask, every tonality you use, every single one of them should have the same ultimate goal in mind, which is to increase the prospect's level of certainty as much as humanly possible, so that by the time you get to the close, he's feeling so incredibly certain that he almost has to say yes. That's your goal. In fact, think of this as goal-oriented communication, I continued, spitting out the phrase at literally the same instant it popped into my mind. Every word that comes out of your mouth is feeding into one single goal, which is to increase your prospect's level of certainty to the highest possible level as you're moving him down the straight line towards the close. Here, let me draw it out for you on the board. Imagine a continuum of certainty between 1 and 10, I said confidently. As I began turning back to the whiteboard, I saw one of the Strattonites' hands shoot up. It was Colton Green. Colton Green was an 18-year-old Irishman with a beefy skull, a budding drinker's nose, and an IQ just above the level of an idiot. A nincompoop among nincompoops, but a lovable nincompoop nonetheless. With a dead smile, "Green? What's a continuum?" he asked. The rest of the Strattonites chuckled at Colton's idiocy, which was rather ironic, I thought, considering that most of them were idiots too. But as it turned out, the usual deterrents to success, such as idiocy and stupidity, were about to become completely irrelevant inside the four walls of Stratton's boardroom. You see, over the next few hours, I literally invented the straight line system as I was teaching it to the Strattonites. The system effortlessly poured out of me, with each breakthrough paving the way for yet another breakthrough. I felt as if I were almost channeling the information from someplace else, a place of infinite knowledge and infinite wisdom, a place where the answers to all of my questions, no matter how complex, were ready and waiting, and there for the taking. So I took all that I could with relish. By midnight, I had laid out the framework for the entire system, and it created the first straight-line syntax. Consisting of 8 distinct steps, the syntax served as a simple roadmap for taking a prospect down the straight line. It showed the Strattonites what to do first, what to do second, what to do third, all the way down to the 8th and final step, where the prospect either said yes and opened an account with you, or he stuck to whatever objection he'd been using as his smokescreen, and you ended the call respectfully and moved on to the next prospect. About a month later, I added on two additional steps as deeper layers of the system continued to pour out of me. Then, many years later, I increased the number to 14 when I created the 2.0 version of the straight line system and began teaching it around the world. Amazingly, though, the core of the syntax remains almost identical to what came out of me that first Tuesday evening, which makes perfect sense when you consider what happened the next morning when the Stratonites hit the phones armed with the straight line system for the very first time. In fact, if I hadn't seen it with my own eyes, I wouldn't have believed it. From literally the moment they started dialing, the entire office went on an account opening spree of such biblical proportions that within 90 days, every last one of them had become a million-dollar producer. But that was only the beginning. As word of our success began to spread, brokers began showing up at my door unannounced. By the end of 1989, there were more than 200 Stratonites working in one massive boardroom at Stratton's new corporate headquarters in Lake Success, Long Island. Twice a day, every day, I would stand before a rapidly expanding army of obscenely young Stratonites and pound them with a combination of straight-line skills training and daily motivation. In essence, by radically enhancing their mindsets and skill sets, I was able to persuade each new Stratonite to leave the insults of the past behind and check their emotional baggage at the door. To accept the fact that the moment they stepped into the boardroom, everything in the past fell off. Day after day, I told them that their past did not equal their future unless they choose to live there. I told them that if they fully embraced the straight line system and simply picked up the phone and said the words I taught them, they could become as powerful as the most powerful CEO in America. And I told them to act as if. I said, act as if you're a wealthy man, rich already, and you will become rich. Act as if you have unmatched confidence, and you will become confident. Act as if you have all the answers, and the answers will come to you. I told them to act as if their success was a foregone conclusion, that it was time to accept the fact that they had true greatness inside them, greatness that had always been there, dying to come out, but it had been buried under countless layers of insults and bullshit that society had dumped on them in an effort to keep them down and make them settle for a life of mediocrity and averageism. And while all those thoughts were still fresh in their mind, I would set up my transition, focusing on the dire importance of skills training by getting brutally honest with them. I would say, maybe some of that stuff people said about you is actually true. Maybe your parents and your teachers and your ex-boss and ex-girlfriend, maybe they were all right about you. Maybe you're not that special. Maybe you were born just an average guy. Not all that smart, not very well spoken, not overly motivated, and you slept through grade school, you cheated your way through high school, you didn't go to college. So maybe you've had the desire to achieve greatness, but you truly weren't capable of it. You lacked the skills you needed to go out into the world and kick some ass. Now, be honest here. How many of you guys feel like that sometimes? Not always, but sometimes. Like when you're lying in bed at night alone with your thoughts, and the fears and the negativity come out and start whispering in your ear, eating away at your self-confidence and self-worth. Raise your hand if you feel like that sometimes. Like clockwork, every hand in the room would go flying up. Exactly, I'd continue. Most people feel that way, and they actually have every right to, because they're not special. They don't have any special skill or talent or ability that sets them apart from everyone else. They have no edge, no advantage that they can use to separate themselves from the pack. Nothing they can use to get rich. And by the way, I hate to say it, but that includes pretty much every one of you in this room. Then I'd quickly add the punchline. Or at least it used to. See, I don't know if you guys actually get this, so let me make it crystal clear for you. You are not the same person who walked into this boardroom on your first day. In fact, you're not even close to being the same person. The straight line system has changed you. It's made you an infinitely more effective human being than you've ever been in your entire life. Because now you own a skill that sets you apart from pretty much everyone else on the planet, you have the ability to close the deal, to influence and persuade at the highest possible level, to the point where you can close anyone who's closable. And since you didn't own this skill before, anything negative that happened to you in the past has absolutely no bearing on the future. Do you understand that? Do you see the power in that? Do you guys realize that every last one of you has turned yourself into a force of nature? Someone who can create any vision for the future they want and then go out and achieve it? The simple fact is that the ability to close the deal is the single most important distinction, bar none, when it comes to achieving wealth and success. And you guys literally own that skill at the highest level. And if you think I'm making this shit up or even exaggerating, then go ask any rich person and they'll tell you straight away that without the ability to close the deal, it is really hard to make money. And once you do have that ability, then everything becomes easy. In fact, that's why I can point to any person in this room who's been here for more than a few months, and he'll tell you some ridiculous success story that no one outside of this room would even believe, because the success is so extreme that they can't even wrap their arms around it. And on I would go, day in and day out, once in the morning before the market opened, and then again in the afternoon after it closed. I kept pounding the strat nights with a twice daily combination of skills training and motivation. And with each passing day, the success stories grew crazier and crazier. By the end of year one, top producers were earning over $250,000 a month, and their success seemed to be almost contagious. Even Par had climbed to $100,000 a month, and the attrition rate was basically zero. In other words, if you made it into the boardroom, then you were almost guaranteed to succeed. All you had to do was take a quick look around you in any direction, and there was massive success everywhere. For a new trainee, this was more than sufficient to quash any doubts about the power and effectiveness of the straight line system. In fact, after a few months of teaching it, I devised a paint-by-number training curriculum that was so easy to follow that it was virtually foolproof. Five core elements of the straight line system. At the heart of the system are five core elements. To this very day, they're exactly the same as the day I created them, and they serve as the backbone of the entire system. As you may have guessed, I've already touched on the first three elements, namely the all-important three tens. One, the prospect must love your product. Two, the prospect must trust and connect with you. And three, the prospect must trust and connect with your company. In essence, as you move your prospect down the straight line, everything you say should be specifically designed to increase your prospect's level of certainty for at least one of the three elements, with your ultimate goal being to move all three of them to as close to a 10 as possible, at which point you're going to ask for the order and hopefully close the deal. However, that being said, what you need to remember here is that this is not the type of process that happens all at once. In fact, in the vast majority of cases, you're going to have to ask for the order at least two or three times before you have any chance of your prospect saying yes. Now, when you finish the main body of your sales presentation, you've reached a point on the straight line where you're going to ask for the order for the first time and wait for a response. And then the back half of the sale begins, which gets triggered when the prospect hits you with the first objection. Alternatively, this is the point in the sale where you'll find out if you have a laydown on your hands, in which case the prospect will simply say yes, and you can close the deal without having to address any objections. But, as I said before, these laid-down sales are few and far between. Most of the time, prospects are going to hit you with at least one or two objections, although usually it's more like three or four. In order to move forward, the prospect needs a high level of certainty. But either way, Since these objections are usually smokescreens for uncertainty, the salesperson has to be prepared to not only answer them in a way that satisfies the prospect, but also make a follow-up presentation that picks up right where the initial presentation left off, with the goal of increasing the prospect's level of certainty for the 3-10s even further, and with an ultimate goal of getting the prospect as close as possible to a 10-10-10, both logically and emotionally, which gives the salesperson the best possible chance of closing the deal. The straight line technique that we use to accomplish this is called looping. Looping is a simple yet highly effective objection handling strategy that allows a salesperson to take each individual objection and use it as an opportunity to further increase a prospect's level of certainty without breaking rapport and then seamlessly transition into a close. In many ways, the art of looping is the so-called secret sauce to the straight line system, or at least to the back half of it, as it allows a salesperson to increase a prospect's level of certainty in small increments as opposed to all at once. In other words, each objection creates the opportunity to loop, and each loop results in a further increase to a prospect's level of certainty. And as each loop is completed, the prospects find themselves that much farther down the line and that much closer to the close. While looping is a very simple process, there is one particular scenario that keeps coming up again and again, and unless a salesperson is prepared for it, it tends to drive them up the wall. For the most part, this scenario rears its ugly head after you've run two or three loops, and you've raised your prospect's level of certainty to a point where they're so absolutely certain that you could actually hear it both in their tone of voice and the actual words they say. In short, the prospect has made it crystal clear to you through their words, their tonality, and if you're in person, their body language, that they are absolutely certain about all of the 3-10s, yet, for some inexplicable reason, they're still not buying. There's actually a very logical reason for this, and it has to do with an invisible force that holds sway over every sales encounter, dictating how far down the line a salesperson has to take any particular prospect before they finally say yes. Or, put another way, at what collective level of certainty does any particular prospect need to be at before he or she says yes? You see, at the end of the day, all prospects are not created equal. There are some who are very tough to sell to, others who are very easy to sell to, and still others who are right in the middle, being neither tough nor easy. When you dig beneath the surface, it turns out that what separates all these potential buyers from one another is the sum of the individual beliefs they have about buying, about making decisions in general, and about trusting other people, especially those who are trying to sell them things. Together, the sum of all these beliefs and all the experiences that have contributed to the formation of these beliefs creates a defined threshold of certainty that a prospect must cross over before he or she feels comfortable enough to buy. We call this level of certainty a person's action threshold, and it comprises the fourth core element of the straight line system. By way of definition, we refer to people who are very easy to sell to as having a low action threshold, and we refer to people who are very difficult to sell to as having a high action threshold. Now, that's all fine and dandy, but what makes this concept so absolutely crucial to a salesperson's success is a remarkable discovery I made that proved to be the linchpin strategy that allowed people with very little natural sales ability to close at the same level as a natural-born salesperson. Namely, that a prospect's action threshold is malleable. It is not set in stone. Practically speaking, the implications of this are staggering. After all, if you can lower a person's action threshold, then you can turn some of the toughest buyers into easy buyers, which is something that we do with great effect in the latter stages of the sale, and that sets up the possibility of being able to close anyone who is closable. However, when you're out in the field, you're going to find some extraordinarily tough customers. I'm talking about prospects who still won't buy from you, even after you raise their level of certainty as much as humanly possible, and then lower their action threshold and ask for the order again. So, for these ultra-tough nuts to crack, we now turn to the fifth core element of the straight line system, the pain threshold. You see, at the end of the day, pain is the most powerful motivator of all, causing human beings to quickly move away from whatever they believe is the source of their pain, and to move towards whatever they believe will resolve their pain. In essence, pain creates urgency, which makes it the perfect vehicle for closing these tougher sales. To that end, it's absolutely crucial that you take the time to uncover precisely what your prospect's pain is and where it comes from. Once I have that information, I can then position my product as a remedy for their pain, and then verbally paint the picture for them of the future, showing how much better they are going to feel as a result of using my product, which has taken away all their pain and has them feeling pleasure again. In addition, by saving this powerful human motivator for last, it gives us the ability to make that one final push, taking the prospect who needs our product and wants our product and can truly benefit from our product, and creating just enough pain to push them across their action threshold and get them to buy. So there you have it. The five core elements of the straight line system. 1, the prospect must love your product. 2, the prospect must trust and connect with you. 3, the prospect must trust and connect with your company. 4, lower the action threshold. 5, raise the pain threshold. Each of these core elements serves its own unique purpose while paving the way for everything that comes after it. My favorite metaphor to explain this process is how a professional safecracker goes about plying his trade, like in the movie The Italian Job. If you haven't seen it, here's the skinny. Donald Sutherland plays one of those old-fashioned safecrackers who puts his ear to the tumbler and listens for each click. Upon hearing the first one, he spins the tumbler in the opposite direction and waits for the next one, and then the next one, and then the next one after that. Finally, when he's gotten a click for each number in the combination, he'll pull down the handle to try and open the safe, and voila! If he's identified each number correctly, the safe will open. In a matter of speaking, that's precisely what you're doing when you're moving a prospect down the straight line. Essentially, you're cracking the code to his or her buying combination, and you're doing it the same way every single time. And here's what we know about the safe of the human brain when it comes to making a buying decision. There are only 5 numbers in the combination. That's it. The first number is a prospect's level of certainty about your product. The second number is their level of certainty about you. The third number is their level of certainty about your company. The fourth number addresses their action threshold, and the fifth number addresses their pain threshold. That's all there is. 5 basic numbers to crack. Now, in terms of how we spin the tumbler, well, that's what the rest of this book is all about. In that regard, I guess it's fair to say that this book is basically a universal safecracker's manual for the human mind. Will it crack every single buying combination? No, not everyone, and that's a good thing. After all, not everyone is closable, at least not on every occasion, and sometimes it turns out, due to ethical reasons, a prospect shouldn't be closed. That said, however, what the straight line system can do, once you become reasonably proficient at it, is get you to a point where you can close anyone who's closable. In other words, if someone doesn't buy from you, then you'll know that it wasn't because you did something wrong. You won't walk away from a sale saying to yourself, "Too bad JB wasn't here, he would have closed them." However, as powerful as the straight line system is, it completely breaks down in the absence of one crucial element, which is you need to take immediate control of the sale. Without control, it's like you're an amateur boxer stepping into the ring with Mike Tyson. Within seconds, you'd be completely on the defensive, covering up from Tyson's massive blows until one finally slips through and you get knocked out. Yet from Tyson's perspective, because he took immediate control of the encounter from literally the moment the bell rang, he won the fight by knockout before it even started. Same as he did in the last fight, and the fight before that, and the fight before that. Put another way, by taking immediate control of each fight, he was able to make every fight the same. Slowly but surely, he maneuvered his opponent into a corner, cutting off every possible escape. Then he softened him up with body blows and waited for him to drop his hands, and then bam, he'd land that exact knockout punch that he'd been planning all along. In the first straight line syntax, and in each syntax that followed, taking immediate control of the sale was the very first step in the system, and it always will be. Just how you go about doing that turned out to be elegantly simple, albeit with one complication. You have only 4 seconds to do it. Otherwise, you're toast. Three. The first 4 seconds. For better or worse, we have to accept the fact that as human beings, we're basically fear-based creatures. We're constantly sizing up our surroundings and making snap decisions based on how we perceive them. Is it safe? Is there danger nearby? Do we need to be extra careful about something? This type of snap decision-making goes all the way back to our caveman days, and it's wired into our reptilian brains. When we saw something back then, we had to size it up instantly and decide whether to stay or run. It was only after we were sure that we were safe that we start debating whether or not it made sense to stick around for a potential benefit. That quick decision-making instinct is still with us today. The stakes are much lower, of course, because we don't typically face life or death situations every day. But still, the process happens just as quickly. In fact, it happens in less than 4 seconds over the phone and in only a quarter of a second when you're in person. That's how fast the brain reacts. Think about that. It takes only a quarter of a second for a prospect to make an initial decision about you when you meet them in person. We know this because scientists have conducted experiments where they hook people up to a certain type of MRI machine that reveals how the brain works as it's processing information. Here's what happens when scientists flash a test subject a picture of someone. First, the subject's visual cortex lights up almost instantly, and then, a quarter of a second later, their prefrontal lobe lights up, which is where the judgment center of the brain is located, and a decision gets made. It happens that quickly. During a phone call with the prospect, you have a bit longer. You have 4 seconds to make an impression. To be clear, though, even when you're in person, it still takes 4 seconds before a final judgment gets made. The difference is that the process starts sooner when you're in person. Literally, from the first moment the prospect lays eyes on you. But either way, whether in person or over the phone, there are 3 things that you need to establish in those first 4 seconds of an encounter if you want to be perceived in just the right way. That you're 1, sharp as a tack, 2, enthusiastic as hell, and 3, an expert in your field. Those 3 things absolutely must come across in the first 4 seconds of a conversation. Otherwise, you set yourself up for a major uphill battle. Now, in truth, if you screw up the first 4 seconds, you have another 10 seconds at most to play catch-up ball. But after that, you're completely done. It's basically a lost cause. You can't influence anybody. At this point, you might be asking yourself, what happened to not judging a book by its cover? What about that, Jordan? Well, my parents were actually big believers in that adage, and so were my school teachers. But you know what? They did it, and so do I, and so do you for that matter. Each and every one of us judges books by their covers. It's basically hardwired into our brains. And it's not just an American thing, it's also an Australian thing, a A Chinese thing, a Brazilian thing, an Italian thing. It's a human thing. It exists everywhere in the world and crosses all cultural boundaries. The bottom line is that you have 4 seconds until someone rips you apart, compartmentalizes you, judges each piece, and then puts you back together based on how you were perceived. And if those three aforementioned things, being sharp as a tack, enthusiastic as hell, and an expert in your field, haven't been established firmly in your prospect's mind, then you have basically no chance of closing them. Now, why is that? Well, think about it for a second. Do you really want to do business with a novice? When you go buy a car or a stock or a computer, who do you want guiding you through the process? A novice or an expert? An expert, of course. In fact, we've been conditioned since we were yay big to seek out experts to help us solve our problems and eliminate our pain. When we were sick, our parents took us to a very special person called a doctor who wore a white lab coat and had a stethoscope around their neck. And we were awestruck at first at how even our own parents deferred to this person until they told us why. This person, they explained, had been through countless years of schooling, during which they learned everything there was to know about making sick people feel better. These people were even taught how to dress and how to act and how to talk so people would have confidence in them at a single glance, which is why you started to feel better just by being in their presence. This person had earned the right to be called a doctor because they were a true expert in their field. But of course, this was only the beginning of our conditioning. As we grew older, the parade of experts continued. If we were struggling in school, our parents might hire us a tutor. If we wanted to master a certain sport, they'd hire us a coach. And when we entered adulthood, we picked up right where our parents left off. And to this very day, we continue to seek out experts and teach our children to do the same. Think about it for a moment. Who do you think Scarlett Johansson wants styling her hair on the day of the Oscars? Is she going to seek out some pimple-faced kid who's fresh out of beauty school? Or is she going to track down the world's foremost stylist who's been making celebrities look fabulous for the last 20 years? And who do you think Jordan Spieth or Jason Day will turn to if they're in a slump? A local pro to municipal course? Or a world-famous swing doctor who's written books on the subject and has worked with other famous professionals for at least 20 years? The simple fact is that we all want to deal with pros or experts, and we also want to deal with people who are sharpened on the ball and who are enthusiastic about what they do. Experts have a certain way of talking that literally commands respect. They say things like, "Listen, Bill, you need to trust me on this. I've been doing this for 15 years, and I know exactly what you need." Novices, on the other hand, tend to speak in far less definite terms, and their limited grasp on the deeper nuances of their product and their particular industry becomes more and more apparent as they move a prospect farther down the straight line and enter the looping phase, and are forced to freeform, meaning they run out of scripted material and are forced to make things up on the fly in an effort to push their prospect's level of certainty above their action threshold so they'll buy. My point here is that how you are perceived will carry through to every part of the sale, but it starts in the first 4 seconds. If you screw that up and make a negative first impression, then you basically have no chance of closing the deal. Interestingly, the first time I said this was close to 30 years ago, on that very Tuesday evening when I invented the straight line system. I told the Strattonites that evening they had precisely 4 seconds to make that all-important first impression. However, as it turns out, I was actually wrong. In 2013, a professor at Harvard University published a study on this exact topic, the importance of first impressions. And what the study found was that it wasn't 4 seconds until a prospect made the initial judgment. It was actually 5 seconds. So I have to apologize for being off by 1 second. Apologies aside, what the study also found was that if you make a negative first impression, It takes 8 subsequent positive impressions to erase that one negative first impression. Frankly, I don't know about you, but in all my years in sales and with all the products I've sold, I can't think of one industry where if I screw up the first meeting, I got 8 subsequent chances to redeem myself. It simply doesn't happen. That's why it's absolutely mandatory to establish those 3 crucial elements in the first 4 seconds of the conversation every single time. Otherwise, you're toast. First, you're sharp as a tack. If they don't think you're sharp as a tack, you're wasting their time. You must come across as someone who's totally on the ball, a born problem solver, who is definitely worth listening to because you can help them achieve their goals. In essence, you have to sound and act like someone who can help the prospect fulfill their needs and desires. You can accomplish this by demonstrating mental speed and agility, fast decision making, and a unique pace of delivery that immediately impresses the prospect and builds trust. However, to achieve lasting success, you must actually become an expert in your field so that you do indeed know what you're talking about. In other words, you can't just talk the talk. You also have to walk the walk. So while you're busy acting as if, you're working at lightning speed to learn everything there is to know about your industry and the products you're selling, so you truly do become an expert. Second, you're enthusiastic as hell. This sends a subliminal message to your prospect, telling them that you must have something great to offer. You must sound upbeat, enthusiastic, and full of energy and be a positive influence in their lives. One of the things that I had to learn the hard way was that just because you can sell someone something doesn't necessarily mean that you should. Today, I have a strong belief in sales as an honorable profession, and I'll only operate in sales situations where I have an unyielding and passionate belief in the value of the product or service I'm offering to prospects. I need to genuinely believe in that value before I sell a product or service, and then I'll describe it passionately. I also have to have a firm belief in the company that the product and I represent. This is what allows me to act enthusiastically in any sales situation. Third, you're an expert in your field, an authority figure and a force to be reckoned with. From the time they were old enough to walk, people are taught to respect and listen to authority figures. In sales situations, I convince the prospect that I'm a highly confident, ultra-knowledgeable professional by coming off as a world-class expert in my field right out of the gate. Not only does this allow me to instantly gain the prospect's respect, but it also causes them to defer to me and basically hand over control of the sale. To demonstrate this authority, I translate features of the service or product into benefits and value for the prospect while using technical industry lingo that I've taken the time to simplify, allowing the prospect to easily grasp what appear to be very complex statements. I'll also add value by offering a unique perspective during the sales conversation, demonstrating extensive knowledge and understanding of the market, industry, product, prospect, and competitors. Remember, the biggest misconception among new salespeople is that they feel like they have to wait a certain amount of time until they can brand themselves as an expert. That's a load of crap. You need to be acting as if from the very start while you educate yourself as fast as possible to close the knowledge gap. Show them you're worth listening to. When you immediately establish these 3 things, they roll up into one simple fact in the prospect's mind, namely, that you're a person worth listening to. In other words, it makes sense for them to take the time out of their busy day because someone who's as sharp as you and enthusiastic as you and who's achieved your level of expertise is going to, 1, get to the point quickly, 2, not waste the prospect's time, 3, have a solution to their problem, and 4, be an asset to them over the long term. In addition, once the prospect has come to this positive conclusion about you, their brain will instantly extrapolate your value to its logical end, which is, you can help them achieve their goals. you can help them get what they want in life. It could be a core need they're looking to fulfill. It could be a simple want or desire. It could be to gain control over a certain aspect of their life. Or at the highest level, it could be to alleviate a pain they're feeling. And again, because the human brain is so naturally adept at this, it takes less than 4 short seconds for your prospect to rip you apart, analyze each piece of you, and then put you back together based on how you are perceived. If you're perceived the right way, that you're sharp as a tack, enthusiastic as hell, and an expert in your field, then the prospect will defer to you and let you take control of the sale. If you're perceived the wrong way, that you're dull as dishwater, a disinterested bore, and a stone-cold novice, then the opposite happens, and the prospect takes control. It's nothing less than a make-or-break situation. Now, that being said, one thing that I want to make crystal clear to you is that I am not advocating that you become one of those talking head types, the kind who go on and on while the prospect just sits there and listens. While that might be what pops into your mind when I say, take control of the sale, I assure you that this is not what I'm talking about. I mean, think about it for a second. Don't you utterly despise being on the receiving end of a salesperson who goes on and on without ever letting you speak? It makes you want to run out the door. That's why the straight line system is as much about becoming an expert listener as an expert talker. However, to truly become an expert listener, you first need to learn how to take immediate control of the sale. There's simply no other way. The million-dollar question is how. Four, tonality and body language. So let's get down to brass tacks. How do you convince your prospects that you're sharp as a tack, enthusiastic as hell, and an expert in your field in the first 4 seconds of a conversation? In fact, let me take it one step further. Since a substantial portion of communication takes place over the phone nowadays, how do you ensure that you're being perceived the right way when your prospects can't even see you? Is it through the words you say? Think about that for a moment. What could you say to try to get all that across in those first 4 seconds? You'd have to be literally yelling at your prospect. Hey, Bill, listen to me. I'm sharp as a tack. I'm enthusiastic. I'm an expert in my field. I swear. And blah, blah, blah. You'd sound like a freaking idiot. Not to mention that even if it all were true, no one would believe you anyway. The simple fact is that the right words just don't exist. There is no combination of words that are profound enough and stealthy enough to sneak past the logic center of your prospect's mind and create an emotional reaction that goes straight to their gut. For it's there, in your prospect's gut, where first impressions get formed in fractions of a second, and they'll guide their decisions until you prove them wrong. So, if your words won't do it, then where do you turn? The answer is simple. Your tone of voice. Specifically, how you say what you say has a profound impact on how it's perceived, and for that matter, how you are perceived. And not just during those all-important first 4 seconds, but throughout the entire conversation as well. You see, after millions of years of evolution, the human ear has become so adept at recognizing tonal shifts that even the slightest one can have a dramatic impact on the meaning of a word or phrase. For example, when I was a kid and I did something wrong, my mom would say, "Jordan," in a stern, no-nonsense voice. And without her having to say another word, I immediately knew that I was in serious trouble. Conversely, if she said, "Jordan," in a sing-song tone, then I immediately knew that things were fine. On the flip side, if a sales encounter takes place in person, then a second communication modality comes into play, working hand-in-hand with tonality to help us get our point across. We call the second modality body language. Serving as the dual linchpins of an immensely powerful communication strategy known as unconscious communication, tonality and body language play major roles in how we get our point across, both while we're talking and as we're listening. In essence, your tone of voice, how you move your body, the facial expressions you make, the type of smile you offer,